Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Special Circumstances, Administrative Exhaustion, and the Prison Litigation Reform Act Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 6, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Ross v. Blake. While being moved to a prison segregation unit, Maryland inmate Shaden Blake was assaulted by James Madigan, one of two guards moving him. Blake subsequently sued Madigan and fellow guard Michael Ross, alleging excessive force and failure to take protective action. A jury found Madigan liable, but Ross objected that Blake had failed to exhaust such administrative remedies as are available before filing suit, as required under the Prison Litigation Reform Act of 1995. The district court agreed with Ross and dismissed the suit against him, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit reversed, holding that special circumstances can excuse a failure to comply with administrative procedural requirements, particularly where the inmate reasonably, even though mistakenly, believed he had sufficiently exhausted his remedies. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the Fourth Circuit and remanded the case. Justice Kagan delivered the opinion of the court, holding that the Fourth Circuit's unwritten special circumstances exception was inconsistent with the text and history of the PLRA, though the court left open on a remand the question whether an administrative remedy was in fact available to Blake. Justice Kagan's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Alito, and Sotomayor. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. Justice Breyer filed an opinion concurring in part. To discuss the case, we have Daniel McConkie, who is Associate Professor of Law at Northern Illinois University College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor McConkie.
The opinion is about Shaden Blake, who was an inmate at a Maryland prison. He was assaulted by two guards, James Madigan and Michael Ross. Blake reported this to a senior guard, and an official investigation ensued. That investigation found Madigan to have used excessive force, but it made no finding as to Ross. So Blake sued both guards in federal court for violating his civil rights. The jury found Madigan guilty indeed, but Ross raised a defense. Under the Prison Litigation Reform Act, Blake had failed to exhaust his administrative remedies. There is a law that requires all prisoners who file suits in federal court to first follow internal prison administrative processes when they have a grievance, and only after they've gone through all of those internal processes can they bring a suit in federal court. Well, Ross was right about the defense, in a sense at least. Maryland prisons do have an administrative remedy procedure. That requires prisoners to file a formal grievance to the warden, and that in turn can be appealed to other prison officials. Ross, in his defense, thought that he didn't have to file that grievance here because officials already knew about the assault and had conducted or were conducting their own internal investigation. The district court sided with Ross and dismissed Blake's case. The Fourth Circuit reversed. It held that sometimes there are, quote, special circumstances that can justify an inmate failing to exhaust administrative remedies. The Second Circuit had already recognized this judicially created exception before. Here, the Fourth Circuit found that the district court should not have dismissed Blake's case because Blake made a reasonable mistake. That is, even though he was wrong not to follow Maryland's administrative remedy procedure, his mistake was reasonable. Any reasonable inmate would have thought that it was unnecessary to file the grievance in these circumstances because the prison already knew all about the assault and was conducting its own investigation. The Supreme Court, unfortunately, for Mr. Blake, saw the matter differently. They started with the text of the Prison Litigation Reform Act itself. The text is clear that such administrative remedies as are available must be exhausted. The court reasoned that there is no room for appellate courts to make a new exception to a law that Congress passes. If Congress here had wanted an exception for this kind of situation, they could have written it into the law, but they chose not to. As other scholars, such as Cornell Law Professor Michael Dorff, have pointed out, the Supreme Court might have looked to another school of thought concerning how to interpret this statute. For example, they could have looked to purposivism, which looks to the purpose of the law, not just the text. Here, a purposivist might have said, because the purpose of the exhaustion requirement is to give the prisons an opportunity to address grievances, there's no need here for an exhaustion requirement. The prison already knew about the assault and took action against one of the perpetrators. Justice Scalia was no fan of this kind of analysis, as many listeners of this podcast may already be aware. Justice Scalia thought it was dangerous for courts to read things into the law that Congress hadn't put there. He was a textualist. He thought that courts should stick to the text of the statutes without trying to guess at what Congress was really trying to say, that is, Congress's purpose. This mode of analysis has clearly influenced the Supreme Court in cases such as Ross v. Blake and others. It is based in part on the principle of separation of powers. Congress makes the law, the courts interpret the law, the courts can't add words to the statute that Congress chose not to include. Thus, even though Justice Scalia is no longer on the Supreme Court, his legacy continues to influence the court. Getting back to the opinion, after dismissing this special circumstances exception, the court did something interesting. It took up the one exception to the exhaustion requirement that is in the statute. The statute says that the administrative remedy must be available. If it's not available, then it need not be exhausted. The court describes certain situations in which a remedy is unavailable, such as when officers are unable or unwilling to provide any relief at all, or the grievance process is too opaque and confusing for an ordinary prisoner to understand, or when prison officials lie to or intimidate prisoners about the grievance process. Interestingly, these situations are not specifically named in the statute, but they derive from a single word, available, that is in the statute. Blake argued that the practice of the prison was to automatically deny grievances where an official investigation was pending. He had evidence of that claim, and he may have been right. The problem is, this issue was never the focus of the litigation. It wasn't fully briefed by the parties or argued before the lower courts. So the Supreme Court could have chosen to ignore it. But they took it up anyway. They remanded, meaning they sent the case back to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, to consider whether the prison grievance process was truly available to Blake. So Blake still has a shot. To me, this is a signal that the Supreme Court takes inmate claims seriously, at least on some level. One more thing. Although Ross v. Blake is not a particularly important opinion, it does make a difference to many litigants. It helps to understand the context of prisoner civil rights claims. The Prison Litigation Reform Act was passed in 1996 with the aim of curbing frivolous lawsuits by prisoners in federal courts. Although there are indeed many such frivolous lawsuits, conditions in American jails and prisons are often bad, even deplorable, and prisoners have few remedies for violations of their constitutional rights. Although prisons usually have their own internal investigations processes, those processes are usually not independent. In fact, most American prisons have no independent, effective oversight. So prisoner lawsuits have for a long time been an important way in our system of addressing unlawful conditions of confinement. The effect of Ross v. Blake is to make it harder for some inmates to sue prison officials.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.